Hello. People fold in. Welcome to EXL 307, Microsoft Link 2013 Preview Deployment and Migration. My name is Andrew Aronsing. I'm from Chicago in the U.S., working for Microsoft Consulting Services as a UC solution architect. And today we also have Barry Stefanos with us here from New Zealand.
Yep, I'm Barry Stefanos. I'm the Premier Field Engineer based in New Zealand. Yep, based in Auckland.
Awesome. Barry's going to give us some demos of the deployment and planning wizard for Link 2013 here later in this session. So obviously, right, if you weren't watching yesterday or the last couple of days, as we have not RTM'd the software yet, all information in the presentation is subject to change. So we're giving you the guidance as we know it today, but if something were to change by RTM, that could happen between now and when we finally ship our 2013 products coming later this year. So in this session, we're going to cover a couple of topics. The first one is really the changes around setup and deployment for Link Server 2013. The second one is what process and what are the constraints around migrating from a legacy version of OCS or Link into Link Server 2013. So by the end of the session, you'll have an idea of what's changed in the Link 2013 deployment process, as well as our prerequisites from a hardware and software perspective, as well as the tools and processes around that Barry will show us later on in the session. So how many people here did not see the architecture session yesterday? Oh, okay, so quite a few people, actually. I'll spend another minute or two on this one. Usually, we just cover this as a quick aside. Most of the architecture changes that we discussed at a high level are in yesterday's presentation. That will be available about a week or two after the event for you to watch or download. You'll have both the slides and the content available. So I'm just going to give a high-level summary of kind of the topology or architecture changes in 2013. Coming from the outside, the first one is that we've added some federation capabilities to Edge. So in Link Server 2010 and prior, you had the capability to federate with OCS 2007, OCS R1 and R2, as well as LCS organizations or other Link organizations, and also the public IM networks, specifically AOL, Yahoo, and Windows Live Messenger. With Link Server 2013, the Edge server expands the federation capability to include Skype federation. We'll be including federation for both IM and audio capabilities with Skype users worldwide. And XMPP. We've moved the XMPP gateway role onto the Edge server. The service component actually runs on a front end, and the gateway itself runs on the Edge server. So now you can federate with XMPP-based organizations, such as Google Talk or Jabber or other systems based on XMPP. Internally, we've moved a lot of the functionality and tried to consolidate it around the front-end server role. We mentioned yesterday that the front-end server, if we look back in time, right, we used to have a lot of different server roles in the early days of OCS 2007, R1, and R2. And that was really around the core count or the processor constraints that we had at that point in time, 6, 7 years ago. A few years back, it was a 4 or 8-core server. It was a lot of processor cores and relatively expensive. That might have been a 2-socket box. But now you can get a 2-socket box that has 16 cores or more potentially. We see 32 and 48-core servers on the market. And so with the ability of adding processor capacity at the server, at the physical server layer, as well as adding processor CPU capacity at the hypervisor layer, the major hypervisor vendors have all announced increased core counts in terms of the virtual CPU core support. We're now able to move or consolidate some of those server functionality that was in other roles back onto the front-end server. And so now we have the AV conferencing MCU, for example, though it could have been deployed either co-located or separate in 2010. We see no reason to break that out in 2013. So that's a co-located by default in Link Server 2013. We've also added the capabilities around mobility, Link web app, and some of the conferencing functionality on the front-end server as well. And so the front-end server is really becoming this general-purpose server in the Link organization, providing as many of the functionality or capabilities of Link as we can, as we see that CPU count expand or the hardware capacity of servers expand on that. We also have the mobility client support on the front end, and that's for iOS, Android, and Windows Phone 7 devices. We will be updating the Link mobile clients post-RTM to include not just the capabilities you have today, but also to include audio and video and over Wi-Fi and 3G connections on all the mobile platforms that are out there. So we'll see an enhanced mobility story. Unfortunately, it's coming post-RTM, so it's not not coming later this year, but after that, around the mobile platform side. The other major architectural change is that the Link client now supports both the Link server pools and the standard IM conferencing video and audio, but as well as what we have renamed persistent chat. So in the Link 2010 and prior, you had a Link client and you had a group chat client. Those clients have now been unified, much like you saw the unification of the live meeting client and the Link client in Link 2010. So now you have a single client in Link 2013 that provides your normal dynamic-based instant messaging, has the persistent IM capabilities, as well as all the audio-video capabilities around that. Link web app also has capabilities around audio and video. If you saw Paul Dolly's session yesterday morning, or if you come tomorrow for the meeting improvements one, we'll show you that audio and video in a browser capabilities from Link 2013. The other server roles that we have are outside of the Link environment, right? There's some other infrastructure we depend on. We require Active Directory, for example. We need an Active Directory environment to deploy Link. We have the monitoring server capability in Link 2013, but we no longer have a dedicated monitoring server. We've also moved the monitoring server capturing capabilities to the front-end server role. We still have a SQL instance that we store that monitoring database in. And when I say monitoring, that's specifically the call detail records, so statistics and metrics on all the communications or calls that are placed in the organization. So was it a USB headset? Was it a voice over IP phone? What codec was used? What are the statistics on that call? Who called who? What SIP URIs? Things of that nature are stored in the monitoring server back-end database, which is SQL, but no longer have a separate server role. It's on the front-end server where we're, the clients are sending that data to be cached and submitted back into SQL. Exchange UM is still the voicemail provider. We support Exchange 2007, Exchange 2010, as well as the Exchange running in Office 365. So you can have voicemail across any one of those Exchange platforms from the unified messaging. And the final other ancillary role in Link 2013 is one we call the WAC role, or the Web Application Components. The WAC role comes from the SharePoint side and is actually developed by the Office team. Specifically, the version we're looking at is PowerPoint. And so with PowerPoint rendering on the WAC role, we're able to see functionality such as audio and video that's in a PowerPoint deck being streamed out to all the Link participants, whether they're coming in via browser or via the full Link client. And so the WAC role will give you the full fidelity PowerPoint meeting experience, even for users who are attending or coming in via that browser client. So with the quick summary of the architectural changes, let's take a quick walk through the Link 2013 setup flow itself. So first piece, right, obviously, is to kind of go through and procure your hardware and software infrastructure required for Link. We're going to go into more detail later of what those hardware requirements are from both a physical or virtual perspective, and we'll also have Barry demonstrate the Link 2013 planning tool, which would help you prepare, based on some user specifications, what that hardware platform or virtual platform might look like. We also have the capability now around adding DFS to make the file storage area for Link highly available. The file share in Link is where we store information that's been uploaded to a conference. So as users upload a PowerPoint or have a poll, for example, or a whiteboard session inside of a Link meeting, that content is stored on an actual file share, encrypted back with the meeting owner information, and we use that then to replicate or show other participants in the meeting or people who join that meeting later want to download content, would pull that from the file share. We have the certificate request process. We have the namespaces that will be identified in the planning tool. We also have a certificate wizard and some changes in that we'll kind of walk through and talk about. Those are used to secure all of our IIS websites as well as our server-to-server communication, including some new protocols or something that we call OAuth or open authentication. You'll also need to define your simple URLs and DNS records. Again, those will be exported for you easily from the planning tool. Your simple URLs is just a short name we have for essentially the join.companyname.com and your admin.companyname.com, for example, for people to have that one-click join experience from a browser or from a link client to join a meeting. Once you have this information, how many people here are running a version of OCS or Prior as their IM or conferencing platform? So a handful. So if you're coming from OCS 2007, R1, or R2, we use the Microsoft Management Console as kind of the management interface for the back-end OCS infrastructure. If you're on Link Server 2010, you'll notice we have a new tool called Topology Builder. One of the issues that we saw in the OCS timeline was there were a lot of places to go inside of the Microsoft Management Console and OCS to make configuration changes, and it was possible to make configuration changes that would not work or lead you to an unsupported state. And so the goal of Topology Builder in Link 2010 was to have you actually define your topology, including things like URLs, server names, IP addresses, for example, all up front in the topology, so we could ensure that you have a properly designed and properly supported deployment on the back end once you've defined the topology. Link 2013 continues this process around the Topology Builder. We've added some capabilities around things like persistent chat, the mobility functionality, and other aspects that aren't in the Link 2010 Topology Builder to unify that setup and deployment experience around a single interface for Link. So inside of Topology Builder, you'll do things such as define your pools, your front-end pools, for example. You might have some edge pools in the organization. You optionally can still deploy a director pool. We do not require directors anymore in Link 2013. The user who talks to any one of the pools will get the same referral that a director pool used to do in Link Server 2010. We also have the concept in Link 2010 of something called the CMS, or Central Management Store. The CMS is essentially the repository of all the configuration information that's stored inside of Topology Builder. A copy of that, there's one read-write copy of the CMS, or the master replica. If you start with a standard edition server, that is the master CMS. If you start with an enterprise edition pool, that master CMS is on the SQL backend database for the first enterprise edition pool that you create or deploy. You can move the CMS after deployment, or move the master CMS after deployment if you like. But we also create a replica CMS on each one of the Link servers inside of the organization. And that ensures that if we have a failure of that master, either the first standard edition box or that first enterprise edition backend pool, the Link servers will continue to operate and run as normal. We won't see an outage. The only thing we cannot do when we don't have the master offline, or when the master is offline, is make configuration changes. So if we want to make a configuration change, the master CMS has to be available. But during normal operations, all Link servers will have a replicated copy of the Central Management Store, and we'll use that to ensure that they're operating as you've defined your topology itself. Once your topology has been defined, there's an option in Topology Builder to publish your topology. Publishing actually takes what you've captured in the local instance of Topology Builder and sends that in an XML file back into your read-write or your master CMS, at which point that then becomes replicated within a couple of minutes to all the Link servers in your organization. At this point, you'd have the option to delegate setup, if you so choose. You can define permissions of who's going to meet administrator of the different pools or different server roles inside of the organization, and then have a different user go and execute the setup process. We then also need to configure the certificates. So we've went through the certificate request process already. Here we'll actually go and import the certificates on the specific server roles. Once those certificates are imported, we can then go ahead and start the Link services, at which point we have an operable Link environment. Optionally, if we want to, we can add Kerberos authentication. There's a process documented for Link Server 2010, and the same process applies for Link Server 2013. We're able to enable not just NTLM v2, but also Kerberos authentication for our Link Server environment. So once complete, we've essentially then deployed Link Server 2013 into our infrastructure. And to give you the detailed walkthrough, right, We start with that concept of a domain join system. There's the forest prep and schema prep process that's familiar from the Microsoft products, where we will modify the Active Directory environment to extend the schema and add the set of attributes and classes required for Link, install Topology Builder, go through and define that topology, publish the topology back to SQL. If it's the first time, we're actually going to create or provision the databases at this time and require a unique backend SQL instance for that process. That will be the backend SQL instance that our first Enterprise Edition pool would handle. Or, as we said, if it's a standard edition server, we would automatically place a CMS in that portion. The Link server roles that are internal to the organization must be a member of your Active Directory forest. So all of your front-end server roles, any optional director or persistent chat roles, for example, that would be deployed, as well as your SQL environment, need to be a member of that internal forest or Active Directory. The Link Edge server role cannot be a member of your internal Active Directory. Typically, it's deployed in a work group in your perimeter network. It can be a part of a forest, but only if that forest is separate from your internal forest. We do see some larger organizations actually deploy a perimeter forest just to ease with the management of all their Windows Server infrastructure that sits in the perimeter network. So once the Link servers are part of the domain, we actually, and we've published the topology and topology builder, we go through and run setup on the individual server role. Setup at this point is going to query Active Directory for a service connection point, use that to determine where the location of the master CMS is located at, and then replicate a copy of CMS down to the local copy of SQL Express on the server itself. So as you run setup, one of the first things that happens is a copy of SQL 2012 Express is installed locally. Setup then will replicate a copy of that CMS it finds from the service connection point in Active Directory to that local copy of SQL Express, and then use the information in there, as well as the server name that it knows about, to install appropriately any of the roles that are required, right? So we run the same setup on each server, and we look at that copy of the configuration in CMS to determine which specific components of Link will be installed on any given server in the org. As we said, we install the certificates, right? Go ahead and start the Link services, and now we have an operational Link 2013 environment or infrastructure ready to deploy or add users to. Finally, we have the option then to install these ancillary or kind of platform services roles. These are not Link-specific roles, but other parts of the Office family, right? So it could be a SharePoint role, such as the web application components. It could be Exchange 2013 with, or Exchange 2010 or Exchange 2007 with the unified messaging role. We can go ahead and provision those separately and then establish the coexistence between Link and those other systems in the organization. So, some changes around that. First of all, as you're going through the deployment planning wizard and your first topology process for Link 2013, you have an option now to specify the database paths during setup. You have a couple of choices, actually, right? You can specify a path manually, or you can use the default paths that are stored in that SQL instance, or specify a location to a database path map, which would include the locations you want to define. And so by providing that information up front, we save you from having to deploy the first copy of the SQL instance and then go in and modify those on the SQL backend after that version's been deployed. We also have another database instance, right, called Link Local. Link Local is part of the Link storage system interface. We covered a little bit about that yesterday in the architecture session, and we'll hit a little bit more information on this new instance coming later in the deck. The other change around setup is support for sysprep. We've had a lot of organizations request the ability to have a sysprepped image that could then be deployed as part of a Link server solution, so we don't need to run setup from the binaries themselves or use something like Windows Deployment Services to deploy it. And so now we have the ability to create a sysprepped image for Link and then run the bootstrapper on that to properly configure or install the appropriate Link server roles after that sysprep image has went and joined the domain. There is also a prerequisite check in the deployment wizard. There's some prereqs that we require for Link Server 2013. One of them is called Windows Identity Foundation and the .NET Framework 4.5. These are part of the security updates and some of the areas around open authentication that we'll talk a little bit more about later. We also use PowerShell version 3.0, so we can enable remote PowerShell for the commandlets used to operate and configure the Link server environment. The Bootstrapper also has the capability to identify the new server roles, such as persistent chat and XMPP, that were different from Link Server 2010. So a single setup process will occur no matter which server role you deployed in Link. We'll pull that CMS information down locally and then use that to make the appropriate configuration. So this OAuth Open Authentication Certificate is something that we use for server-to-server authentication. As we look at more dependencies between one of the back office server products, such as Link, and our other... Oh, is it going to sleep there?
Sorry.
Make sure the demo machine doesn't go into standby. So OAuth is used for our server-to-server communication for the back office server products. This would be things such as SharePoint 2013 and the WAC rule, or Exchange 2013 and the Unified Messaging rule, to allow us to have an authentication process server to server that doesn't rely on passing username and passwords between that server environment. We also have some new certificate management commandlets. The big one here is the two changes here. One of them is when creating a certificate request, we have an option for all SIP domains, and we will go through and add all the SIP domains defined in Topology Builder into the certificate request. And the other one is around certificate management. We've added some intelligent or some certificate wizardry into Link Server 2010 to make the request process simpler. What we found is that after 1 or 2 years in production, you'll have certificates expire, and you need to renew those certificates to keep the services functioning. This expiration process was something that in the past, when we'd import the new certificate, that certificate would become live, and we might have an interruption in service there as we stopped or started our services or performed the maintenance around that certificate process. With the set-cs certificate commandlet in 2013, we have a -role option, and the role option allows you to specify a date and a time that you want that new certificate to go live. So this allows you to import a certificate during your normal business operating time period, but specify the date and time to go live during your maintenance window, at which point Link Server will then start using the new certificate at that go live date versus the date and time that you actually imported the certificate. So goal basically being to simplify that process of managing and renewing certificates once you've got the Link Server environment, Link 2013 environment deployed. As we mentioned, right, this new OAuth protocol is our capability to ensure that we trust the web applications component or WAC server role, as well as an Exchange 2013 unified messaging server role, or potentially any integration between Link 2013 and Office 365. So OAuth is a way that we can essentially define some realms inside of Link. The realm is your SIP domain or SIP domains that we have. We don't actually require an authorization server. OAuth can be used either with a couple of realms and server to server or with a couple of servers and an authorization server itself. The main benefit is we don't have the concept of, or we don't have the requirement to pass credentials between the different server systems, so we have a built-in trust platform between our back-end server environment. Our next piece is around deployment validation. We spent a lot of effort in Link 2010 around the concept of synthetic transactions. And so rather than just reporting back that we saw a certain event in the event log that said a service was stopped or a DLL was not able to be called successfully or some other sort of arcane error message either in the event log or in a status reporting log, we wanted to have the concept of emulating actual end-user activity. And so with synthetic transactions, we actually simulate sending an IM from a user to a user, creating an audio call from user to user, a video call, starting a conference, right? The different activities a user would actually go through and take. And we define a couple of test users to simulate these from. And so then by running synthetic transactions, we have a much more robust error reporting capability of what actually has failed. So rather than just getting a certain components failed, we know specifically if the service is available or not. So we might see that a server in our system center monitoring solution, right, that one of the front-end servers has went down, but from our synthetic transaction pane, we can see that Link is still available because we've got other front-end servers or maybe another pool handling that specific workload. The difference in Link 2013 around synthetic transaction is that we're now able to run the synthetic transactions externally. We used to have to run the synthetic transactions on the same backplane as a Link server environment, but our end users often weren't on the same subnet or same location as the Link front-end servers. And so having these synthetic transactions run closer to where an end user workstation is located and or outside of the network itself ensures that we have a more accurate reporting. So now we're capturing, do we have any network issues, such as a router or firewall or gateway between our synthetic transactions and the back-end server, as well as is our edge or is our perimeter infrastructure the one that's going to be at fault or have an issue for external users coming inbound. For the Office web apps for the WAC server installation portion, that comes from the SharePoint side. It's a separate setup and installation experience, right? They'll go through and they'll define the WAC server or the WAC farm, potentially, that's being defined. Once that's complete, we'll actually go in and define what are called some discovery URLs inside a topology builder. So we can see we specify for the WAC components a URL, and that URL is then used to discover the capabilities and the configuration information, required for those web app, for the WAC server or for the WAC farm. Once we have those defined in topology builder, we're then able to go in to use an import module in PowerShell and actually import the configuration of that WAC server or WAC farm into our Link server environment. And once that information is there, users who are scheduling web conferences will now be leveraging that WAC server environment to do things like share out PowerPoint presentations or Office web app applications in a meeting session. Okay, so that's kind of the 20 minutes or so around the changes of setup and deployment. Let's switch up a little bit and talk about the hardware and software requirements for Link Server 2013. First of all, we've got some changes, right? By co-locating the AVMCU and the XMPP gateway, we're increasing essentially the CPU requirements or CPU utilization of those front-end server roles. All of our scalability and performance recommendations, right, are subject to changes. This is what's going on the unoptimized beta 2 code, right? One of the last things we typically do after we finish up the features and working through the bugs is then go through a performance tuning exercise, which is in process right now. So right now, our guidance is going to be between 12 to 20 servers per pool and around 12,500 users per front end. These are subject to change again, as we're saying, based on final performance and final code, final feature sets. Hardware requirements are pretty similar to what we've seen in the past, right? So we're saying two CPU sockets. We don't recommend that you go out and buy four socket servers for these. There typically tends to be a big price differential between a two-socket server and a four-socket server. And so from the Microsoft Office or back office family, right, Exchange, Link, and SharePoint, we try to focus most of our code on the most prevalent or widely available at low-cost server platform that typically is a two-socket server device. And so that two-socket box would have anywhere from 8 to 24 CPU cores, kind of depending on your user load, user profile in the organization. The change, actually, that we're seeing is around storage. So in the architecture session, we talked about how we're moving some of the, or offloading the dynamic state changes from the back-end SQL infrastructure onto the front ends themselves. And so when a user's present state change in Link 2010, that's the front end writing that information back to SQL, SQL storing that present state change, and then making it available to all the other front ends in that pool that query for that information. Those state changes and dynamic information of who signed in, who signed out, and advertising state is quite heavy from a storage impact. And so we used to have some very specific recommendations around storage performance, ensuring that that back-end SQL environment could keep up with all of that dynamic state information. With Link 2013, we've moved the dynamic information from the back-end to the front-end. And so now the front-ends themselves are capturing and storing in SQL Express, replicating amongst themselves this concept of user state and dynamic changes of who's signed in, who's not signed in, and other things that are transient in nature. Things that are permanent, right? So changes to my contact list or changing my call forwarding sessions or changing my delegate, for example, will still be modified in SQL. But those transient changes, me going from do not disturb to available to busy to in a phone call, for example, will only be stored and processed on the front end. As a result of us moving some of these transient changes from the back end to front end, we see an increase at the storage requirements today at the front end server itself. So on an Enterprise Edition server, right, we're saying 8 or more SAS drives on the box in RAID 1. That would be our guidance for that 12,500 user server, for example. For Standard Edition boxes, we're saying 4 disks RAID 1 would handle the 5,000 users that we would have deployed. Memory, also, we're upping our memory requirements. We're seeing larger contact lists essentially be defined. And if we did kind of the back of the napkin math, right, if we had 12,000 people, 20 contacts per person, for example. Each contact represents around 15 kilobytes of RAM on the server. We see 4 gigs of RAM for that, just the contact list, right, on one of those front-end boxes with those kind of parameters going forward. So estimates as to what our hardware requirements look like are here. RTC local and link local, our guidance recommendation around that says to start with 4 gigabytes. We will see reduced storage requirements there due to offloading some of the information from the back end to the front end, as we mentioned, for that portion. Director monitoring and archiving, these again are subject to change. These become optional roles in terms of the director, for example, as well. Pretty similar to what you saw in Link Server 2010. We haven't made any substantial changes around hardware requirements there. And SQL backend, same process, some backend storage requirements around that, and a two-socket server for the SQL infrastructure itself. In terms of NICs, it kind of depends on our throughput. So you've seen some of the features around things like HD video. You might have seen Paul Dolly's slide on bandwidth for HD video, for example, that is required. And so when we start to look at functionality such as VGA conferencing and HD video conferencing available in Link 2010, we start to move away from just a single 1 gig NIC into teamed NICs, for example, or even moving to 10 gig Ethernet as a backplane for our input-output to the Link server front-end roles. If we're not doing the higher-end video capabilities, for example, we'll see reduced traffic on that, and the typical guidance will apply around network bandwidth. Our support for operating systems would be Windows 2008, R2, SP1, or later, as well as Windows Server 2012. So we plan on shipping with Windows Server 2012 support for Link Server 2013, both as a physical host, as well as support for Windows Server 2012 Hyper-V, which includes the larger core count support to enable larger VM guests. SQL Server, we can run either 2008, R2, SP1, and above, or SQL Server 2012 coming, right? The other aspect around that is we do install a copy of SQL 2012 Express on each of the front-end roles or other persistent chat roles, for example, in the org, that are going to have that copy of the CMS replicated locally. We use that copy of SQL Express both for the central management store being replicated, as well as that concept of managing that dynamic state information that's changing. We've also removed the support we mentioned yesterday for SQL clustering. The goal here is to make the SQL backend experience simpler, and so you can either have a standalone SQL server on the backend or SQL mirroring on the backend, which reduces the requirement for shared storage and for setting up a cluster at the SQL or backend layer. Software prereqs, right? We mentioned the concept of Windows Identity Foundation, PowerShell 3. If we have Link in the environment, we need cumulative update 6 in order to install Link Server 2013 into that organization and have them work side by side. For the front-end servers, we require the Windows desktop experience to be loaded. On Windows Server, the audio and video codecs that we require, the media stack codecs, are not part of server by default. But once you install the desktop experience, we get those media components installed. With Windows 2008, you install the desktop experience, and you get the whole package of the media stack. For Windows Server 2012, we actually went to the Windows product group and said, could you give us just the components required for Link? And they have a separate component installation process that allows us just to pull in the media stack options that we require for Link Server 2010. In terms of administration, we don't yet have an admin client for Windows 8. That is coming. It's under development. We just RTM'd Windows 8 itself, I want to say a couple of weeks ago. I think earlier this month in August. It's not August, it's September. So last month, about 4 weeks ago. And so we'll see a support for Windows 8 coming shortly around RTM or post-RTM for that concept of the admin interface. In terms of the forest and domain support, Windows Server 2003, 2008, or 2020 or 2012 from a domain functional level and a forest functional level in the organization. In terms of other infrastructure, we still support DNS load balancing for the Link 2013 clients to talk to their appropriate servers in a Link 2013 pool, but we do require a hardware load balancer for the web services. So our web component services and Link web app, for example, browsers don't have the capability of automatically determining are using DNS load balancing, for example, the same way that we do in the full client. So we need that hardware load balancer for the web services itself. We do have a list of the hardware load balancing vendors that have been certified or provided solutions and guidance around deploying with Link Server 2010 and Link Server 2013, and we have a reference for you in the deck. Virtualization. We are modifying our virtualization stance as well. This stance has not been finalized at this point in time. So the current guidance in Link Server 2010 is relevant as of today. The principles in there will still apply. We will support the larger guest counts. We have announced support for more than four cores as a Link guest running on Windows Server 2012 or a hypervisor vendor on SVVP who supports more than four cores as well. We also expect to take care of the new NUMA architecture enhancements on chipsets to enhance sort of the virtual experience. We essentially have optimized a lot of the audio and video codecs and have worked with the hypervisor vendors to ensure that when a packet actually hits the network interface card on the virtual host, it's relayed into the processor, if that's real-time media, much faster than what we saw on the hypervisor vendors going back three, four years ago. And so enabling that real-time media support at the hypervisor vendor layer allows us to have that audio and video and full codec support around that. The current unsupported features are around quick and live migration. Issues with this essentially is if that server is hosting a conference, that interruption in service leads to a disjointed conference experience. You will see the roster kind of randomly change. Some people drop, some people are able to be successfully moved, but we don't have a smooth conferencing failover experience when we're using quick migration or live migration on any of the virtualization vendors today. Dynamic memory is one that we're actually evaluating. We don't know yet whether or not we'll have support for this at RTM, but we are going through testing to see if that's one of the options that we'll be able to light up for 2013 versus previous versions. And finally, VM replica, similar as quick and live migration, when we're trying to move the state around like that, if there's a real-time audio or video conference or web conference on the server itself, we tend to see some negative user implications around that. We'll also show you as Barry comes out, right, the virtualization support and the planning tool itself. Final chunk is around clients. So there's some significant changes around the client deployment process. The first one is that as part of the Office family, there is no more standalone Link MSI. Right? So you'll get the Office 2013 setup package. Office 2013 setup includes your common Word, Excel, PowerPoint, right, OneNote, et cetera, as well as applications like Outlook and now Link as well. So Link becomes part of the Office family, essentially, and we use the Office family tools for modifying or customizing the installation experience as the process for modifying or customizing the Link installation experience. So with Office 2013 preview, you can get the Office Customization Tool, or OCT. That allows you to modify or create transforms, essentially, to the MSI to customize your Link installation experience, create a config.xml file, right, and then specify that on your software distribution method to ensure you have that customized client deployment. We also have the capability continued from earlier versions to enable you to specify specific client media ports. There's two ways, essentially, to go through a quasi-type deployment with Link. One is if your network team can trust the Active Directory team. Active Directory has a set of group policies that allow us to specify a specific set of media ports at the application level. So we can say that only the link application of a certain version is allowed to specify or tag the packets for quality of service with the diffserv information. Or if we don't want to trust that concept of having the machine tag packets, we can specify the port ranges we want the link application to use and let the switch or the router actually go through and tag the packets with the appropriate quasi information. Link 2013 continues support for the concept of enhanced privacy mode. Enhanced privacy mode is for the people in an organization who don't want everyone to see their presence. They only want people in their contact list to see their presence. This was first introduced in Link Server 2010. We carry support forward to Link Server 2013. The one caveat, right, is that if you have people with legacy clients, OCS 2007, R1, or R2, those will not honor the enhanced privacy mode setting. So with that, let's take a look actually at the manageability tools. So there's a couple tools that we use for managing Link Server 2013. We mentioned, first of all, the concept of the planning tool. The planning tool is an interview process that walks through, gathers information about your organization, your user model, what features of Link you'll use, and then spits out a Link topology, URLs, IP addresses, namespaces, server roles, etc., physical or virtual, IPv6 support, XMPP, the new features that we see in 2010. We've made some updates to the planning tool for 2013. Barry will show us that in just a moment. The other one that we have, right, instead of going through the slides, we'll actually show you the demo here in a second. The other one is Topology Builder itself. We made changes in Topology Builder, like we said, to encompass things like mobility, XMPP, and the persistent chat backend interface that weren't there in Link Server 2010. So let's take a look with that. We'll switch over to Barry, and he'll show us the changes in 2013 from a planning tool and a Topology Builder perspective.
Cool, thanks. So what I've got with me in here is the Link Server 2013 planning tool. So these planning tools could be used to plan for our Link 2013 planning. So we're just going to get through the planning tools. I'll show you as well the topology builder, the Link 2013 topology builder, and probably just have a quick look on the Link 2013 control panel. So this planning tool is used to design the Link environment. So we're just going to get started with this Link 2013 wizard. So it's going to ask us whether we're going to use the audio video conferencing. Is this the same like the Link 2010 planning tool? It's going to emphasize on the Link 2013 workloads. So dial in conferencing, web conferencing, and then enterprise voice is the same as well. Exchange UM, whether we would like to integrate with Exchange UM if we would like, and then it's going to just put a server for the Exchange UM in the planning topology that we've got. And then call admissions control, monitoring, and archiving. This is the new changes in Link Server 2013 planning tools where we can actually integrate the archiving to Exchange server. So in these sections, we could define whether we would like to integrate with Exchange server or with the SQL server database as we used to know. So I'll select that. And this also incorporates for whether we would like to deploy a persistent chat pool. So this persistent chat pool could be a standalone server, or you could also deploy it within a pool where you have, when you have high availability requirements, then you could specify, for example, a persistent chat pool. Mobility takes mobility as well, so whether we would like to use the mobility within the planning, federations, and we're adding the XMPP-based IMM presence provider in there, so we used to just have the federations with OCS or OCS 2007 R2 as well as with public IAM provider. And then this is the high availability, so it's going to basically define whether we will need to have enterprise editions pool or whether we are actually pretty good with the standard editions pool and the pool pair feature that we have in Link 2013, which basically provide the pool for disaster recovery purpose. So I'll select yes. And this is the new things in Link 2013 as well. So we can specify whether we would like to use the IPv4 and IPv6 as well. So this is mainly used in the edge deployments where we have limited public IP address, but we could specify this as well for the internal deployment. So I'm just going to select that. And we've got the disaster recovery. So this disaster recovery is used for the pair pool features in Link Server 2013 where a pool data is replicated across to a different pool. So I'll just, for example, say yes in here. So that's a feature of Review Complete. So we design sites, we can give it a name, for example, give it Auckland, and we could define, for example, 1,000 users for organizations in Auckland. And these are the summary of the features that we selected earlier. So I'm just going to get on with that. And we could specify the subdomain that we would like to use. So for example, I specified as contoso.com. And this is the setting about the conferencing settings, like the meeting concurrencies, media mix. And we incorporate the new feature in Link 2013, such as the multi-view feature, whether we would like to use this or not, and as well as the HD, whether we would like to use the high definitions as well or not. So I'll get through that. The voice setting is basically the same with the Link 2010 planning tool. The voice infrastructure as well. Exchange UM, and the actual user access in here, we have the options to define like how many contacts that will be doing the XMPP federations, and the options whether we would like to deploy director or not within the environment, and whether we would like to enable high availability within the edge. So if we select this, then it will basically set up an edge pool. So I'll probably say not in there. And this is the persistent chat setting. So it defines how many, the percentage of the users who will be using the persistent chat. So I'll take the default. This is the client settings, and we take the considerations for your mobility clients, as well as the Link Web Access. The Link Web Access is the web clients where we can join the conferencing and get the audio and video. And this is the collocations options for Medicine Server. It's basically the same like in 2010, so just get through that. And draw. And we've got two sites in here, Auckland and Auckland DR. And if we drill down to Auckland, we basically get to the details or the high-level overview of the planning. And we have in here front-end server and the SQL server because we are would like to have high availability. And you see there are two SQL server in there, which is mirrored from one SQL server and another, and then persistent chat pools, one edge server because I didn't specify high availability on that. We can have a look at the edge network diagram as well in here, and we can see that there are support for IPv6. If you'd like to change the IP addresses and name in here, you can double-click at the node and then specify your IP addresses and name that you can later use for your documentations or your planning itself. We've got a nice as well in here, edge admin reports. Specify what the certificates that will be needed to set up these link environments, the firewall report, DNS report, and et cetera. And the other nice thing as well, we can export these to Visio as well as Excel, so we can take this into the Visio or Excel. And that's about the planning tool. I'm going to show you the topology builder in Link 2013. So I've got with me this topology builder where we specify the pool and the server components that we've got. So normally when we start a topology builder, we will come up with these options, whether we would like to download it from the existing deployment. If we have got the Link 2010 setup, then we can basically download the topology builder, but then we'll need to use the Link 2013 topology builder to modify the topology, so you can't no longer use the Link 2010 topology builder. And then we have open topology from local file, or if we are setting up a new Link 2010 or 2013 environments, then we'll need to select the new topology. So I've got with me a sample topology document that I exported from my environment, and then I just opened this from my environment. So I've got in here basically two sites like Auckland and Wellington, and then within a site we can actually define a pool and the server component within the site. And then I've got Link Server 2010 as well, so I'm in a coexistence scenario where I've got Link Server 2010 as well as Link Server 2013, where you will probably be in these kind of situations where when you have deployed Link Server 2010. So in Link Server 2013, in here we could define the pools that we've got in Link Server 2013. And as you can see, in 2013, we no longer have the audio-video conferencing pool. We no longer have the monitoring and archiving server, as they are co-located within the front-end servers. And then we can basically have a look as well. We've got this set of shared components, where we have SQL Server Store. And then we have the concept of trunks as well, where we used to just have the PSTN gateway, where we have just relations between a mediation server and a gateway. Now we could create multiple relations between a gateway and mediation server based on the port combinations that we define on the trunks, and we can use it later on in our voice routing configurations. The other things that I'd like to show you as well is the pool property, where we could define basically some of the new stuff in Link Server 2013, such as when if we would like to set up a SQL Server a mirroring for the database, we could define the SQL Server instance, and then when we specify this, actually Link Server will basically set up the mirroring for us, so we don't need to set up the mirroring manually on the SQL Server level. So we just need to define the SQL Server instance within our topology builder. And the other thing is, as well, this resiliency, which is we call it as a pair pool, which it basically acts as the disaster scenario. Like normally, when you have the Link Server Standard Edition, it's kind of difficult to, for example, provide the resiliency for the standard editions, because we could only have one server within the pool. While with this pair pool, we could basically replicate the data from one pool to another. So if one pool is down, then basically we have the other pool to stand by to serve services for user home in that pool. So that's my topology builder demo, and just a quick look at my in the Link Server 2013 control panel preview. So in here we've got the persistent chat taken into the Link Server 2013 control panel. And then we've got the mobility policy in here, where we used to have to do it through PowerShell. We have it now in the user interface. And yeah, so that basically concludes my demo.
Awesome. Thank you. Cool. We like the demos that work.
Yeah, that's
good. Good job, Barry. All right. There's a shifter on the... Oh, there it goes. All right, so the last couple slides we have are around migration. I'll try to push through these as we're pushing on the 60-minute mark. I think we have 5 minutes left, and we have quite a few giveaways to go through. In summary, the migration is similar to what we... basically the same process in coming from earlier versions of Link or OCS. You'll deploy a Link 2013 pool in the side-by-side approach, as we call it, and then move users in any... usually we recommend move a couple users, validate functionality, move with a larger pilot group, ensure the functionality is as expected, and then move the bulk of your users over from their existing 2007 R2 or their Link 2010 pool onto Link Server 2013. The support process for that is what we call N-1 or N-2. That means we support migrating users from either Link 2010 or OCS 2007 R2. We typically don't support a third back version, right? So we don't have capacity to migrate directly from OCS 2007 R1 into Link Server 2013. Client versions, as we said, our client support policy is different now. You can now use the Link Server 2013 client against a legacy version pool, right? So we can put Link Server 2013's client against a Link Server 2010 pool environment, so we can now deploy either the client first or the server first, depending on which one's more flexible, or potentially even at the same time. With previous versions, we typically had to do a server first and then roll to the new client after we moved users onto the new server. In terms of voice coexistence, I've got a slide covering what the process or support policies is around that coming up right after persistent chat. We wanted to point out that for persistent chat, the one caveat here is you cannot use the new Link 2013 all-in-one client against a group chat instance from 2007 R2 or Link 2010. So the Link 2013 client will work against a typical front-end pool in Link 2010 or OCS, but it does not work against the legacy group chat type environments. For voice routing, we have nearly full support. The one caveat is that we can't have an outbound call from the Link 2013 preview client when the home server, right, is on 2007 R2 and the mediation server is Link 2013. But other than that, we can have the support for a home server of 2010 or 2013 with a mediation server of 2013, 2010, or R2. So we're enabling you essentially to deploy the Link server pool without having to replace or upgrade all those mediation servers concurrently with those pools. We're able to deploy the pool side by side with your existing mediation servers and then enable you to migrate or augment those mediation servers with the new routing functionality in Link 2013 as you go through and deploy and configure that process. We will cover the concept of coexistence and the trunk changes that Barry mentioned in the voice session this afternoon in a lot more depth. The one other aspect that isn't supported right now is the concept of a Link 2013 survivable branch appliance going back against a Link Server 2010 pool. So if you have a Link 2010 SBA, that will work with a Link 2010 or Link 2013 pool. If you have a new SBA, that will 2013 version SBA, that will only work with a Link 2013 pool. For inbound calls, all the topologies are supported. So we have one outbound calling combination that's not supported, and then one SBA scenario that's not supported as well. For topology processes, if you're used to Link 2010, it's very similar. You'll run Topology Builder for Link Server 2013 and download your existing Link 2010 topology, then be able to publish the Link 2013 topology and Link 2010 topology up against your master CMS. As Barry mentioned as well, once you make the change to the Link Server 2013 Topology Builder, you can only use the Link Server 2013 Topology Builder to make edits to that topology information. We don't want you to go back and use the down-level Link 2010 Topology Builder to try to modify the topology. The configuration then is still stored in the central management store. We will replicate that to all the Link servers inside of your environment. Users, as we said, can either be migrated from the Link control panel or from PowerShell, depending on your preference. If it's a Link user write, it's a MoveCS user. If it's a legacy user, or if it's a OCS 2007 R2 user, it's the MoveCS legacy user. Process for OCS 2007 R2 is very similar to what you'd be doing to migrate to Link 2010. First, you'll have to import the topology using the import-cs legacy configuration. That will read your existing OCS 2007 R2 configuration information and build a copy of it in Topology Builder for you. We don't require you to manually go into Topology Builder in 2013 and define all of your OCS 2007 R2 environment. Once the topology has been imported, we can then publish the topology. All the Link 2013 servers that you introduce will then be aware of not just the 2013 environment, but also the 2007 R2 environment. If you make 2007 R2 changes, we need you to rerun the import CS legacy configuration, right? That will update it and ensure that the Link 2013 servers have those capabilities. So with that, you've got an overview of the setup and deployment changes. We walked you through the changes around setup for Link Server 2013 and covered some of the new protocols, such as OAuth, that we require some certificate changes around, as well as a quick overview of the migration and coexistence story from OCS 2007 R2 and Link Server 2010 and coming to Link Server 2013. So with that, thank you for your time, and we'll move on to some of the giveaways. And we actually prepared for this one. We came up with some questions. So for the questions, we'll go for the T-shirts and the cups. First one, and let's see, we might need some. Can you guys help a little bit with the spotting? It's hard with the lights. The first one is, what is the OAuth protocol used for in Link Server 2013? I saw one in the middle up there. Server-to-server communication. Is it link server to link server or something different? Should we be more specific on the server-to-server? Yep. So other back office, so Link to Exchange or Link to SharePoint, for example. There is a T-shirt. Let's do a T-shirt and cup combo, because we're pushing time. Thanks. What about the Link local database? We have RTC local in Link 2010. There is a new database. Yellow T-shirt in the front? Link local is used. So what's the Link local instance used for in Link 2013, or the new instance? I think he raised his hand before the question finished. Yes, sorry. It's the Link storage system, which includes the non-persistent changes that are used there. So let's pass that one out. And I think, is that the T-shirts, Lohit? Let's move on then to the random number generator. We'll try to find one of those on the internet quickly. Random number generator. Unless you've got a random number there, Lohit. All right, you can go at the first one because the internet's slow today.
950.
Who's close to 950? 951? 931. So we're 19 away. 16 away. Anyone closer than 16 to 950? All right, we have a lucky winner. One more car. And the random number generator is still not coming up. Just out of curiosity, are there 4,000 tag tickets, or does it stop around? It must be around 2,000, right? I'm guessing around 2,000 to 3,000. So let's say. Now, it's hard to come up with a random one now that I have a seed number or a salted value. Pardon? Goes up to about 3,000. Let's say. I don't know, you probably didn't hear the random number thrown out, so.
2,700.
2,480. we're within 300, 200. 2,635?
2,675?
2,677? 2,8? Which one? 127? You said 2,700. So we have 28. What was the other one?
Oh, he's got the spot on.
Oh, someone's got it spot. We have another. We have another spot on. All right. Well, thank you to everyone for coming out. Appreciate your time for seeing the setup and deployment changes in Link Server 2010. Thanks, Barry.
Thanks. Awesome.